Chapter 9. Despite Kyla's warning, I couldn't deny that I was excited to see more of what the leisurely side of the magical world was like. The bars we'd been to had been pretty similar, but what would a club like Pandemonium be like? Even regular human clubs could get pretty weird. Carmen and Asami came back from the grocery store, and we made lunch, which was to say that I made lunch while Carmen watched me and quizzed Asami and Kyla about more fairy lore.
"He makes the best meatballs,"
Carmen told the other women, matter-of-factly.
"Like, I missed him when he was away in the army or whatever, but I mostly missed his cooking."
I rolled my eyes at her, but couldn't quite keep the smile from my face. "Yeah, love you too, monkey," I said as I began rummaging around the cupboards for oregano. "So are there any other big no-nos for dealing with Faye?"
"Not really,"
Kyla said with a shrug.
"Just try to be polite. If a fairy believes you're sliding them, they won't let it slide. So, just be on your best behavior. Out of interest, if they do end up feeling offended, what would they do to get even? Generally, Sealy Fae won't kill humans."
The blonde said carefully, but she winced, which already didn't bode well.
"But that doesn't mean much. There's one story of a human man who was taken as a lover by a member of the Sealy court, but he fell in love with a human woman and ran away. In response, his old fairy lover tracked him down and plucked out his eyes so his gaze would never wander again." "Jesus!"
Carmen grimaced.
"Best not to fuck with fairies, then."
"Yeah, sounds like it's just best not to fuck fairies," I said, and I laughed when my sister groaned at my bad pun. Kyla and Asami didn't laugh, however.
"Refusing a fairy if they proposition you is similarly dangerous. Honestly, any time you have to deal with them, you really can't do more than simply hope for the best."
At that, I couldn't help but look over at Kyla and wonder how she and Keegan had, happened. Had their father fallen in love with a fairy, or had he simply been unable to refuse a creature so much more powerful than him? From how Kyla had looked when I'd asked about her father, it was clear that their relationship was strained. Why was that? Did he look at his children and see only reminders of being a fairy woman's plaything? And for that matter, did Kyla and Keegan know their mother at all? Did she care about him? Had they even met her? Or had they been dropped on their father's doorstep in the middle of the night, like Tristan in Stardust? I was glad she had Keegan, just as I surely would have gone crazy without Carmen. Kyla surely would be much less well-adjusted if she'd had to put up with all her family drama alone. And that wasn't even taken into account the bullshit she got from the other eyes, like Flora. "Have you heard from Keegan at all?" I asked the blonde as I thought about her brother. "How's he doing?"
"He texted me."
Kyla nodded.
"Which means he's awake and lucid, but it'll still be a while before he can be discharged from the infirmary. I think it's a little strange that those men knew to carry iron knives."
Asami frowned as she tapped her finger on the kitchen countertop.
"Do you think they were linked to these half-fae disappearances?"
"It seems like too much to be a coincidence. I doubt there's a second group of people looking to kidnap half-fays in Los Angeles right now," I said in agreement, and then I looked to Kyla. "Were those men related to the job you and Keegan were working on, or did you just run into them by chance?"
"By chance,"
she said with a nod.
"Or sort of. We'd noticed those men following us for a couple days, so we tried to set up a trap to lure them into a secluded place so we could question them. We just weren't expecting them to be armed against fairies. If you two hadn't been there, I don't know what would have happened. Well, you'll never need to find out. Keegan will get better, and the two of you can flip the bird to the order for not trusting you." "I like the sound of that,"
Kyla said with a small laugh, which relieved me. If she could laugh, then she was probably going to be just fine. We ate our food, and then began to make preparations for our mission that evening. The chief order of business was being able to blend in, and that went further than simply giving Carmen and me a crash course on fairy etiquette. Pandemonium was a high-end club, so we would need to put some effort into our appearances. For myself, this simply amounted to a nice dress shirt. I couldn't really do anything with my hair since it was still army regulation short, but I shaved. Carmen, meanwhile, was faced with the task of finding clothes that would fit Asami and Kyla while still being appropriately flashy. And my sister had never really been one for clubbing, at least not at places like Pandemonium, and I reckoned I could count on my fingers the number of times I'd seen her in a dress. But she managed to rustle up something black, slinky and fitted enough that Kyla, whose build was more slender than my sister's, could comfortably wear it. Asami, being rather curvier and shorter than both Carmen and Kyla, posed a different kind of challenge. I watched as Carmen pulled out seemingly every article of clothing she owned, in a bid to find something, and they eventually settled on an oversized, floaty shirt with a deep V-neck. Well, on Carmen it had been a shirt. On Asami it was a cheekily short dress.
When I imagined going out into the field, this wasn't what I had in mind.
Asami told me as she emerged from my room, while tugging the hem of the shirt dress self-consciously. Well, if you're uncomfortable, we can find something else for you to wear. Or you can stay here and leave the field work to us.
No.
She lifted her chin, and there was a fierce glint in her dark eyes.
I want to help, and Kyla needs all the help she can get. I can put up with having cold legs.
Well, I think you look lovely, I said with a warm smile. And it was the truth. The dark purple material of the dress shirt contrasted nicely against her lightly tanned skin and jet black hair, which she'd pulled up into a messy topknot. One strand had come loose and hung by her cheek, so the end brushed against her collarbone, and I reached out to tuck it behind her ear.
Thanks,
Asami murmured, and I saw a tinge of pink rise in her cheeks. Hey, you promise you're okay with this? I know I'm new to this hunting stuff, but I still have experience in the field. If you're unsure about this at all...
I'm sure.
Asami cut in as she straightened up and firmly met my gaze. And that was all there was to be said on the matter. Because just then, Kyla and Carmen came out of Carmen's room. Kyla was wearing the dress my sister had found, along with a pair of strappy black shoes. Carmen, meanwhile, had found a white crop top and a pair of fake leather pants that laced up the sides.
Hmm. Well, you went and grew up on me, monkey,
I said as I looked her up and down. It was a far cry from her normal jeans and faded T-shirt combo. You almost look like a real adult.
And you almost look like a real human being.
She put her hands on her hips and flashed me a mischievous smirk before she turned to Kyla.
He cleans up nice, doesn't he? You look very dashing,
Kyla said with a smile. I couldn't help the heat that rose to my cheeks, and I raised a hand to rub at the back of my neck sheepishly. You look nice, too, I said to her, and she did. She'd practically been poured into the slinky, sparkly dress, and it took me a long moment to tear my gaze away from her. I caught Carmen grinning at me shamelessly, and I scowled at her in a silent plea for her to let the matter drop. But I knew she wouldn't. Well, now that we all looked the part, should we head out? I gestured toward the front door and looked around the group.
That sounds like a good idea,
Kyla said as she curled a lock of blonde hair around her finger. Carmen had loaned her some jewelry, too, and a set of oversized silver bangles glittered at her wrists.
I wouldn't mind getting there on the earlier side so we can get a sense of the place before approaching Amaryllis.
Yeah, scout the place out a little, I agreed with a nod. Unless we go in blind, the better. We hailed a cab, which took us to the approximate vicinity of the club, but as with everything else in this hidden world, it could only take us so far. The driver gave us a funny look as we climbed out of the cab, seemingly at a random spot in Long Beach, but a polite smile and a tip went a long way, and he drove off without any comments. It was a short walk to the club itself, and even its glamoured appearance had a certain presence. It was 4 stories tall, and the walls had been painted black, so they gleamed darkly in the light of the street lamps. The windows were all frosted opaque and were lit from inside by color-changing lights that pulsed in time with the rhythmic beat of the music, which was faintly audible even from where we stood out on the street. Everything about this place screamed a sort of dark, sultry indulgence, down to the red neon sign above the entrance. Now I understood what Kyla had meant when she'd said there was a chance you may never come back out. Something about the club beckoned, and felt as twisted and perversely satisfying as an addiction. Oh, I can see why a place like this is prime spot for fae revelries, I said as we stood outside the club and took in its appearance. Part of me wanted to go inside right this second and dance the night away. Another part of me wanted to turn tail and run away as fast as possible.
We need to stick together when we're in there. If we have to split up, stay in pairs, all right? No one wanders off alone.
Understood, I said with a nod, though honestly I wondered how much of a difference that would actually make. If a fairy wanted something from us, I wasn't sure there would be much we could do to refuse.
I wasn't surprised to find that getting in was actually pretty easy, so it seemed getting back out would be the difficult part. We stepped inside and walked down a hallway that, just like in the sanctuary, seemed longer than was physically possible, given the size of the building from the outside. Stepping into the club itself was like stepping into an alternate dimension. The music we'd heard only vaguely outside now pounded in my ears, loud enough to make my back teeth rattle, and the multicolored lights moved around so the shadows constantly shifted and made it difficult to pick out the edges of physical objects.
Trippy!
Carmen yelled over the music, and I turned to look back at her to ask if she was all right, but stopped short at the sight of Kyla. Your face! I said, but my voice was only barely audible over the music. Kyla looked at me like she was a little confused, but then realization sparked in her green eyes.
Oh!
She said, and raised a hand to her face.
This place has black lights, doesn't it?
Oh, I had no idea how the black lights factored into that. All I knew was that Kyla suddenly had strange glowing markings on her skin. Curled lines mapped themselves over her body, framed her eyes, and spiraled down her arms like a tiger's stripes, and they shone faintly greenish, but a more muted shade than her eyes.
Fairies have bioluminescent markings?
Kyla told Carmen and me.
Half fey have similar markings, but they only show up under ultraviolet light. That's so cool!
Carmen yelled over the music. She raised a hand to touch Kyla's arm, and then hesitated, but Kyla smiled, pulled on Carmen's hand, and let my sister run her fingers over the skin. I watched as Carmen then took her hand away, and for a moment the tips of her fingers glowed, like the light had literally rubbed off on them. Do they do anything? I asked Kyla.
No.
She answered and shook her head.
Though some fairies believe they can be deciphered. That the markings are the story of your life written over your skin in a lost language. Kind of like palm readings?
Well, frankly, I'd never believed in that sort of thing. Being able to tell the future from lines on your hand or leaves in your tea. Even after having learned that some magic was real, I still doubted predicting the future was anything more than nonsense. But I couldn't deny there was something fascinating, almost mystical, about the patterns on Kyla's skin. We headed over to a booth and clustered around a little circular table. It offered a faint sense of privacy, as there were dividers between the booths, but I got the impression that Pandemonium was not a place where secrets were kept. So, if this place is a club, but consuming fey food is how you get trapped, how do people buy drinks and stuff? I asked. There was a bar on the opposite wall, and row upon row of glass alcohol bottles glittered in the shifting lights.
You just have to be smart about what you drink, and make sure you pay a fair price. Nothing is free, even if the price might not be obvious up front. Why does it matter? We're not here to get drunk. We need to keep our senses sharp.
Yeah, we do. I was just curious. It seems it would be a waste to have a bar if no one would buy drinks.
You underestimate sheer stupidity's involvement. Some people wouldn't care about possibly getting trapped. They'd buy a drink and take that risk anyway.
Well, that's not how we're going to do things. So how do you want to play this? Will this Amaryllis woman come out onto the dance floor, or...
I don't really know.
Kyla admitted as she fiddled with her hair.
We'll just have to play it by ear when it comes to her. But we could ask other people here if any of them know Jameson or saw him the night he went missing. Do you want to split off into pairs now, or are we saving that as a sort of last resort?
We'd cover more ground if we split up.
If we stay within eyesight of each other, I think we'll be okay.
Kyla nodded.
Carmen, you go with Asami. Leo, you come with me.
Logically, I knew this made sense, because Carmen and I were still new to this and would need help to make sure we didn't make any mistakes. But some childish part of me buzzed at Kyla so casually saying she wanted to be paired off with me.
I see a couple of half-fays at the far end of the dance floor.
Asami said, and looped her arm through Carmen's.
I'm sure they'll know something about Jameson.
Carmen nodded and allowed herself to be pulled off toward a small group of people who had similar glowing markings to Kyla, though not before she shot me a look that seemed to say, don't waste this opportunity.
Where do you want us to start, then? I asked as I turned to Kyla.
I think for now we should just observe, try to get a sense of how things work here. Until we can speak to Amaryllis, I don't know how much useful information we'd find. I can't imagine anything would happen in a fairy club without the owner knowing.
Do you think she might have had something to do with Jameson and the others' disappearances?
I suppose that's possible.
Kyla admitted as she nervously twisted her hair.
Some fairies really don't like half-fae, but letting them be captured seems a bit extreme. Fae blood, even if it's been diluted, is meant to be treated with a certain respect in their eyes.
How archaic, I remarked. My gaze drifted over to Carmen and Asami, who were now in conversation with the half-fae. I had no idea if they were finding out anything useful, but I was at least comforted by how Carmen and Asami's postures seemed relaxed, so they were probably doing all right. I wasn't sure exactly how much time passed as Kyla and I sat there, but we kept one eye on Carmen and Asami as we tried to get a sense of who was in the club and what they were all doing. It really did feel like doing recon for a military operation, and that made me feel a little uneasy. If it came down to a fight, what would our odds be? How many people would we be expected to contend with? Oh, hopefully it wouldn't come to that. The music thrummed in my ears, which didn't help the sensation that time was sliding like rain down a window. Like how the lights made edges hard to pick out, there was, again, the sense that nothing was precise. Everything was fuzzy round the edges. But I knew ambiguity was a fairy's primary weapon, and I knew to stay on my guard. Eventually, Carmen and Asami came back from their little chat with the half-fae, though they hadn't learned anything useful. The half-fae had known Jameson, but nothing about what had happened to him. He'd been here the night he went missing, though, which at least meant he'd made it to Pandemonium unscathed. It also meant that someone at the club was probably responsible for his disappearance. Maybe the same men who'd cornered Kyla and Keegan liked to stake this place out and accost people as they left. Or maybe they even came into the club and lured people away.
Don't everyone look at once,
Carmen then said, and drew me out of my thoughts. She'd raised her hands, as if to prop up her head, but she was looking very pointedly at me from across the table.
But I believe Amaryllis has just made an appearance.
I glanced around and tried to look nonchalant about it, and I quickly found who my sister had been referring to. It was obvious, at once, that this woman was a fairy. After I'd seen half-fae like Kyla and Keegan, I could understand how they were the compromise between a human and this. Amaryllis was tall, possibly taller than me, though I wouldn't know for sure until I got closer to her. And she moved so gracefully and effortlessly that she practically seemed to glide over the floor as she walked, an effect made all the more peculiar by the lights. She too had markings on her skin, but they were brighter, probably because they were apparently visible in regular light too. They stood out starkly against her nut-brown skin, and from between thick curls of dark brown hair emerged two glossy black horns. We watched as she drifted across the room, and her flawless white dress floated around her legs as she moved. The gown had been draped loosely over her shoulders and left her arms bare, and it had a slit high up on the leg, which allowed us to see she didn't appear to be wearing shoes, just silvery coils wrapped around her ankles and calves. She was undeniably beautiful, but it sort of went too far, like her beauty was taken to such an extreme that she no longer looked human. Everything about her was elongated, skewed, to the point where it almost looped around to grotesque.
That's Amaryllis, a noblewoman of the Seelie Court.
Well, how do we go speak to her? Do we just go up and ask to chat, or do we have to hope she summons us?
No, we can go to her, but we'll have to be careful about it.
Kyla answered, with an expression caught halfway between thoughtful and worried.
Maybe let me take the lead for a bit, since I'm a half-fae.
Yeah, right, we'll follow your lead, I confirmed, and Asami and Carmen both nodded. Kyla gracefully rose from her seat and walked toward where Amaryllis had sat down, and Carmen, Asami, and I followed her. Before Kyla could even get a greeting out, Amaryllis spoke.
Kyla Campbell,
she said in a fond tone, and I couldn't help but start a little.
Kyla hadn't mentioned previously meeting Amaryllis.
I was wondering when you would come and grace my establishment with your presence.
You two know each other?
I asked Kyla in an undertone, but she shook her head.
We've never met. But Fae, living in the human world, like to keep tabs on one another, and, well, there aren't many eyes with Fae blood.
You have a reputation?
I asked, and I couldn't help but grin at her.
I suppose you could think of it that way.
She replied, as a slight blush dusted over her cheeks. Then she took a step forward and managed a slightly awkward curtsy in her fitted dress.
Lady Amaryllis, might we join you for a conversation? Of course.
Amaryllis said, and she spread her hands in invitation for us to sit, which made me notice her fingers were unusually long. The booth she'd chosen was much fancier than the other booths, but that made sense since she was the owner. The seats were plush, and there was a platter of fruit in the center of the table. I felt my mouth water at the mere sight of the ripest fruit I'd ever seen. Even from a short distance away, I could smell how fresh they were. But I knew better than to try and get a taste.
May I have your names?
Amaryllis asked, and her all-black eyes landed on me as they sparkled with mischief. You can call me Leo, I told her politely and smiled. A sharp-toothed smile spread across Amaryllis's face, and I wondered if she was pleased I'd known the loophole or hiding disappointment over it.
And you too?
She then asked as she turned to Carmen and Asami.
You may call me Carmen. Please call me Asami.
Out of the corner of my eye, I saw some of the tension drain out of Kyla's shoulders, like, you know, she was relieved we'd all passed this first hurdle without seeming too obvious about it.
I must say, we don't get too many humans here.
Amaryllis said, and she looked at Carmen and me. Her voice was musical, like it was layered over itself, quite literally enchanting. And I would have been happy to listen to Amaryllis speak for hours.
Especially the likes of you two. There's not much magic on you yet. How curious. But such pretty faces. I've always had a fondness for twins. You would make delightful additions to my revelries.
She reached out one long-fingered hand and brushed it across my cheekbone. But I forced myself not to move away and was surprised to find that her touch almost fizzed like tiny bolts of static electricity.
Oh, not much magic on you at all.
Amaryllis murmured, and she gave another sharp smile before she brushed my cheekbone again.
You can feel my magic when I touch you, can't you, pretty thing? I could have a lot of fun with someone like you. All you'd have to do was say yes.
Please, ma'am, I said and forced my voice to remain steady, but I couldn't deny something about her was strangely magnetic. Maybe she was working some fae charm on me, or maybe it had just been a while. We were wondering if you knew anything about the missing half-fae.
Ugh, you're no fun.
Amaryllis pouted, and she looked over at Carmen.
Such a shame. But yes, I am aware of those disappearances. Jameson Hawthorne was one of them. He was.
Kyla nodded.
He's the most recent one to have gone missing. A lot of half-fae like to spend time in Pandemonium because it's one of few places where they can spend time with the fair folk whilst also being at ease. Part fae are not looked upon kindly in Faerie. In parts of the Unseelie lands, they're hunted for sport. Do you know anything about the night Jameson went missing? Well, I didn't speak to him that night, but I saw him leave with an associate of mine, Mr. Sullivan Scratch.
At the mention of this name, I saw Kyla tense. I made to reach out and touch her shoulder, but then I felt someone touch my shoulder first, and I turned to look at Asami, who was shaking her head at me.
What's wrong?
I asked softly, hopefully too softly for Amaryllis to hear me over the music.
Is Kyla okay? Who's Sullivan Scratch?
A vampire. A vampire with a taste for the sun.
Okay.
What does that mean?
If a vampire drinks fairy blood, they're temporarily able to withstand sunlight. We call them daywalkers, but fey blood is also very potent, and if they drink too much, they can burn from the inside out. So half-fey are like a happy medium, a compromise. If Jameson left with Scratch and no one's found a body yet, Scratch is probably feeding off him. What was Mr. Scratch doing in Los Angeles?
Kyla asked, which drew my attention back to her and Amaryllis.
His clan is based in Phoenix, yes. But surely you've heard the terrible things that have been going on in Phoenix recently. I know humans have been going missing.
Kyla said as her brow furrowed.
No word of vampires. Not vampires. But everything that's happened has put Phoenix in the spotlight, so to speak. Which would make it more difficult for someone to privately indulge in their proclivities.
But if he's drinking half-phase, wouldn't you have a problem with that? He's harming others of your kind.
Oh, you smell like war, pretty thing.
Amaryllis said, and her smile was cold and hungry like a shark's.
Do you weep every time one of your kind is harmed?
I opened my mouth to speak, but nothing came out, so I closed it again.
That Jameson and the others have been missing for several weeks would imply they are being held against their will. Consensual blood drinking is legal, and if Scratch stays within the law, he may give in to his fetishes however he wishes. But it seems that is not the case. No, it doesn't look like it. I was hoping the Order's half-fey would come and investigate this issue. Well, due to your telling us about Scratch, we have a solid lead on where to go next. You have our gratitude, Lady Amaryllis.
We all stood to leave, but Amaryllis raised a hand.
Ah, just a moment, my dears.
She said, then she cocked her head a little bit too far to the side, like a bird sighting its prey.
Where do you all think you're going?
I'm sorry?
My lady.
Kyla asked. And her tone was equally confused.
I confess, I was beginning to wonder if I would have to report more than 3 missing half-fey before someone would come looking. I did have such a vested interest in the Order's little half-fey twins coming to investigate.
Something uneasy prickled across my skin. I glanced at Carmen, as if I could actually do anything in that moment to protect her. But her expression was determined, which was a small comfort.
I never expected you to take up the case of your own accord.
Amaryllis continued as she stared at Kyla with her unfathomably black eyes.
And that truly is a shame. I do so admire that kind of motivation.
What are you talking about? I growled. Maybe it was offensive, but something was definitely wrong, and it was Amaryllis's fault.
Oh, it's quite simple, dear heart. As much as I admire Kyla's conviction, I simply cannot abide her kind. I have taken great efforts to make Pandemonium a place where part fey feel safe and accepted. It makes them so much easier to control.
You're behind the disappearances? I demanded, as I felt the hairs on the nape of my neck stand on end.
Technically, that honor falls to Mr. Scratch.
The fey woman smiled with a few too many teeth.
I merely lined it all up for him. And Jameson Hawthorne in particular, well, there are few in the magical world who believe the veil is the best way to go about defending magic from humanity. Jameson believed that the world's logical, ideal state was the interaction of humanity and magic. But of course, a perversion of fey blood would like to fancy himself some kind of pinnacle instead of the abomination he truly was.
Next to me, Kyla was shaking. I could practically feel the anger rolling off her. The frustration at how she hadn't seen this coming. At how none of us had seen this coming.
Humanity ought to be servile to magic.
Amaryllis went on. And now there was a hint of disgust behind the amusement in her eyes as she stared at Asami, my sister, and I.
Humans are ill-suited to magic. They try to compensate with their silly little inventions, but they have always lacked true power. But because of the veil and the order, we are forced to hide from them. A cosmic joke. Magicals are denied their rightful place above humanity, all for the sake of assuaging their childish fears.
Suddenly, she stood from her seat, with her white dress rippling around her and her skin markings glowing. I had never been more acutely aware that she wasn't human.
But if our kind must suffer the humiliation of the veil, then I can at least keep the human scourge out of our magic.
She cooed, and she reached out to catch Kyla's chin in one long-fingered, almost claw-like hand.
And that starts with eradicating half-breeds like you.